Nice remix, boys. That's Northern Cree, everybody, from their album Red Rock Powwow Songs, recorded live at Muckleshoot. And you are now tuned into Native Waves Radio. Welcome to the show. We are with you every Tuesday from 2 until 3 p.m. on CFUV, located at 101.9 FM on the radio dial, and on live streaming on the internets at www.cfuv.uvic.ca. You can also follow us on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, SoundCloud, and iTunes. Native Waves Radio also has their own Facebook page. You can join in there, and lots of wonderful news, information, and new music is shared on that Facebook page. Be sure to join in. I wanted to open the show today with a little bit of Northern Cree, because today was a very special day. The Indigenous Music Award nominees have been announced, and here's this about that. Indigenous Music Awards is very pleased to announce that Northern Cree is the recipient of the 2017 Lifetime Achievement Award. The Alberta-based Grammy and Juno-nominated powwow group who performed at this year's Grammy Awards premiere ceremony and the Juno Awards is also nominated in the Best Hand Drum and Best Powwow Contemporary Album category. So good luck to Northern Cree. You guys don't need it, because all the men and women who are part of the Northern Cree legacy and the current Northern Cree incarnation nation as they exist now have been rocking it so for many, many years, and have always been wonderful, wonderful music contributors in the traditional powwow and hand drum category. So I want to open the show and give them a little shout out. And of course, I'm going to be blathering on about all of the Indigenous Music Awards later on in the show. But for the first half hour, we're very honored to have two special guests in the studio live on the air with us. Their first time on radio, correct? Oh, let me put your mics up, please. That is correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So we're going to make this as painless and as enjoyable as possible for you. And to say that we're going to be treated today by a live reading of a theatrical play that was written by one of our guests. And that's going to be a joy. I don't know if we've ever done that here on Native Waves Radio. So it's a first for us as well. So please introduce yourselves one by one.
Okay. Just like to say thank you very much, Janet, for having us today. My name is Goodenai Labucan.
Right. Where are you from?
My family is from actually Northern Alberta, and I'm Cree,
yes.
And I'm currently working as a lawyer with Devlin Galis Watson Law, downtown Victoria.
Lawyer / playwright.
Yes.
Nice. And?
And I'm Zsuzsa Harsman, and I'm a Hungarian refugee arriving here in Canada with my family in 1956. And I'm just so pleased to be here reading the story with Goodenai today that she wrote.
Okay. And this now you call it a story, but it is meant to be a very short play.
Originally, it was actually written as a story.
Oh, okay.
And Zsuzsa and I sort of, I rewrote it as a two-person play.
Okay. Have you presented the play before?
We've done it, about five times now?
That's right,
In front of different audiences, church groups and judges, students. And
we did it actually at a conference here at UVic as well.
Which conference?
QVic.
Okay, very good. And the title is Del's Truck. Now, do tell us what the title is all about.
Del's Truck is sort of a play on the title of the Aboriginal landmark case, Delgamuukk.
And explain for those who don't know what Delgamuukk is all about.
Okay, in five words or less.
Yes.
Delgamuukk was a 1997 Supreme Court of Canada case that established that Aboriginal title still exists in BC. There's actually, if I could quickly, before we tell you the story, so there's four little points about Del's Truck that I always like to let the audience in. So one is that in Del's Truck, we refer to certain people and certain things, and they're reflective back into the Delgamuukk decision. For instance, couronne is French for crown, and regina is Latin for queen.
Mm.
Judge McEachern, who was the original judge to hear the case,
right.
He refused to hear the Gitxsan and Wet'suwet'en's people's songs that established their ownership, saying that he had a tin ear. The term sui generis is a unique legal principle that applies to Aboriginal law. There's nothing else like it. Lastly, that the court didn't actually give Aboriginal title to the two plaintiffs, and when they sort of were summing it up, they said that, you know, you could have Aboriginal title, but you couldn't do anything to basically change the title. Like you couldn't strip mine, for instance.
Right. Okay. In 1997, gosh, that was kind of an interesting time for a lot of people. Remind us if that had anything to do with the hearings around accepting oral tradition as evidence in the courts.
That's exactly right. That was another aspect of the Delgamuukw case that was firmly established. The Supreme Court of Canada said that, you know, in evidentiary matters, that equal sort of, shall we say, weight should go to the oral histories of Aboriginal peoples, given that their histories weren't written down.
Okay. And this was a precedent, a set of precedents, did it, in terms of, like, law policies and things like this?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. It led in, really, it was sort of the watershed of a lot of sort of Aboriginal title cases coming up.
Okay.
And also in terms of just Aboriginal rights.
Okay. And was this something that you studied in your field of practice or in your studies throughout
Yes.
law school?
Yeah, it's sort of a cornerstone of any Aboriginal law practice.
Right. Now, how long did the hearings actually take?
It was over a decade. It was like 15 from the start to the finish.
Yeah.
And actually, at the end, they didn't get title, as I said.
Right.
And what it meant is that the Supreme Court said, you know, you'll actually have to go through another trial in order to establish that.
Right. So what is it that you wanted to say in this story turned into a short play? What was the messaging that you wanted people to walk away with from your version?
Well, a lot of it came from just my own experiences in law school. I had a tremendously difficult time in law school, not because of the law school, but because of the subject matter.
Mm.
And so I think for me, it was just my way of standing up and saying, you know, I don't accept what the law is in Canada. And so I wanted to sort of show in a humorous way, an accessible way, how you could look at it from a different point of view.
Right.
And that in my mind, that's an equally valid view that doesn't get a lot of airplay.
Okay. No doubt. Introduce us to the characters in your play, if you would.
Well, there's only two characters. There's Del, who's the main character, and he's just your sort of happy-go-lucky guy who owns a truck.
Okay.
And and he shares his truck, and he loves sharing his
native
truck.
Native guy?
He's a native guy, that's right. We don't actually say where he's from, but
okay.
he's probably from around, you know, the north.
Okay.
And the other person actually is Reg Carone. So again, Regina, Carone.
Right.
So,
got
you know,
it.
He is the used car salesperson.
Okay.
On his sweet, generous deal slot.
Okay, very good. Yeah. I think we can dive in. Are you two ready?
Yes.
Thanks for giving us this live play reading on Native Waves Radio. Never done before. Thanks.
Great. Raven tells a story.
Dell's truck was a beauty. A Ford XLT extended cab, super camper special, vintage 1981. It was painted brown with a broad yellow stripe down the side of the bed. Del lovingly referred to it as the Nanaimo Bar. He drove it all over and used it for hunting and fishing, and when winter came, he would haul firewood. All who knew Del knew his truck. He was very generous with his truck. He left the keys in it, and anyone who needed wheels could borrow it. It would always come back with a little more or a little less gas. Del liked sharing his truck. It made him a rich man. One day, Del was in the local cafe drinking Hydebuck coffee and eating a piece of pie. After paying his bill, Del got up and looked outside. He noted with some annoyance that his truck wasn't there. He thought, well, maybe Millie had to go to the grocery store. Big Bob was hauling garbage. Not too concerned, he headed out the door and started to walk towards town. It was a beautiful, crisp December day. It was the sort of day that hints at the bitter cold to come and the promise of a wondrous clean palette of snow. As Del entered town, he saw a raven swoop down on the power line. He nodded to the bird. Further along, he smiled and said hi to several friends. He was a well-known and well-liked man. Feeling expansive in his connection with the world, Del was rudely shocked to see his truck sitting on a used car sales lot. The lot was called Sweet Generous Deals. It was new in town. It had a motley group of vehicles that had seen better days. Seeing his beloved truck there with a sticker price on his windshield caused Del some concern and surprise. Quickly crossing the road, he inspected the truck to be sure that it was his Nanaimo bar. When he was walking around the back of the truck, a voice came from behind him.
She's a beauty, eh? Pleased to meet you. My name is Curone, Reg Curone.
Oh, Mr. Curone, my name is Del, and this here is my truck.
Well, I'm glad that you can see yourself behind the wheels of this fine truck, Mr. Del.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, this is my truck. I don't know, someone, maybe Melvin, must have played a joke on me and brought it here as a prank.
No, actually, I found this truck with its keys in the ignition and brought it here. And the law might see it this way. Whoever left the keys in the truck was simply inviting someone else to take it, which I did, and now it belongs to me. And instead of leaving it vulnerable and open to the community vandals, I have a better use for the truck. I aim to sell it and make me some money.
Tell me who set you up to this. I love a good joke.
Mr. Dell, I don't believe I was in any way being funny. And I'm beginning to suspect that you might have had a few too many and should go home for a bit.
No, wait a minute. That truck is mine and I can prove it.
Okay. Do you have ownership papers, insurance forms, or anything else that would prove your ownership?
Well, no. I mean, the truck was my dad's and he gave it to me. We didn't bother with papers. It was family. And I don't insure the truck because it would cost more than the truck's worth. Besides, I only drive it locally and on the back roads.
Oh, then you have no proof of ownership. Nothing a court would point to and say, oh, yes, this truck is yours.
Well, I may not have any papers, but I can describe this truck down to every dent and scrape. That dent on the bumper there, that happened when I hit a deer out on the logging road out near Renfrew. And the stain on the seat, that was when Millie's kids spilt their ketchup from their Happy Meal. And the fishing rod on the back, that's my brother Bill's. I know that getting out of first gear is a bit tricky and that the right-hand mirror needs a bit of duct tape to hold it up. Let's see, the engine knocks more going uphill and she drinks 520 oil like it was Coke. Hey, I can sing you all the songs in the cassette in the glove box. Let's see, there's Patsy Cline. Crazy. Oh, Hank Williams, you're cheating hard.
Please, Mr. Dell, please. I don't want to hear you sing. In fact, I have a tin ear, so I couldn't tell one song from the other.
Oh, okay, but listen. I can get some of my family and friends over here to back me up. They'll tell you the truck is mine. Heck, they drive the truck more than I do.
Honestly, it doesn't matter how many friends come here and tell me that you own the truck. The fact is, I have the truck. And now, Mr. Dell, let's be reasonable men. We all know that possession is 9/10 of the law, and tales from friends and family won't change that. In fact, I'm not sure who owns a truck. As you said, everyone drives it. So how can it be yours alone? I, on the other hand, have sole and exclusive possession of this truck at this moment, so my ownership is going to be assumed, as I won't leave the keys in it unguarded. Mm-mm.
This is absurd. How can you claim ownership when the truck is mine and has been in my family for over 20 years?
Well, that's the law. You have no proof of ownership. And how do I know that anyone else who drives it won't come by and claim to own this truck? But hey, I'm a businessman, and you can buy the truck or lease it for a monthly fee. And leasing allows you the benefits of ownership without the hassle of owning the truck. And of course, you can't change the truck in any way while you're leasing it. No big tires or new paint jobs. But you can still use it to hunt and fish and haul firewood, but you can't haul bricks in it. And at the end of the lease, you return it here and you can get a new vehicle. And that's why we call it a sweet, generous deal. I also offer the Curone's honor guarantee of trouble-free driving for a whole month.
How can you leave? lease me a truck you don't damn well own. It's mine. I'm going to prove you stole it. You... But Mr. Carone had already turned his back and went to talk to a young couple looking at a minivan. Dell was stunned. He scrunched up his eyes, hoping he would open them and find himself back at the Pooch Pup Cafe with his truck parked outside. No such luck. All he saw was Carone's grinning face. Dell walked slowly away from the lot. The sound of the raven cawing over the valley followed him.
So, Dell, the truck is a metaphor for territory. Is
you
that
got
correct?
It. Okay. You got it.
Okay. So, that was very well done. Very well read. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Juja?
Yes.
How do you enjoy playing the villain? The metaphor for all of the bad colonial people and experiences.
Well, you know, I've been asked that before, and I think part of it is that I am the villain. You know, that's part of I am a settler in this country here, and part of that is being aware and knowing that, and that's actually why we do this story.
Nice.
Is that we actually talk about that, and that's the dialogue that we actually talk about is how do we, first of all, as settlers, unearth what the history is here in Canada and what we learned and unlearn it, and then where do we go from here?
Right. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it seems to be a very consistent thing in my experience and in my time here on this earth, that, you know, the colonial mindset is one that just really believes and understands and has adopted, and it's an innate within them that anything that it's indigenous is theirs to control, is theirs to take on for themselves and to teach others and to even teach the indigenous people what it is, what those things are. And I mean, there's nothing more insulting and wrong than that. And I really appreciate the fact that you've put this story and the history, that history, into context that is can be shared, you know, as innocently as school grade kind of theater, but as profound as the TRC hearings themselves. And so thank you for that. And again, it was really, really well read. Where do you think, if you continue to write this story, where would it go?
If I continue to write this story, you mean Dell Struck?
Yeah, that's right. If there's a part two,
if there's
a part
two, yeah. In some ways, actually, I've sort of tossed around the idea of somehow working Dell's truck into the Silcoteen situation, where where obviously the Aboriginal title was established.
Okay,
and that, you know, for me, that was like it was one of those things that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime.
Right.
And certainly I think, you know, Dell in his own world would have never thought, you know, that A, he would lose his truck, but
right.
that B, somebody else right. would actually get theirs back.
Right.
So there's sort of a nice little segue into that.
Okay. And what kind of law are you practicing right now?
I actually do Aboriginal law.
Okay.
As I said, I work with Devlin Galis Watson.
Okay.
And we do Aboriginal law, and most of our clients then are Aboriginal, and so we do employment law.
Okay.
We're involved in the Treaty 8 Western Boundary case that wrapped up last year.
Oh.
And so, yeah, we do a variety of things.
Okay. And so what is your hope in terms of, you know, what you've been practicing and I don't know if you want to talk about any challenges that you found learning, because you're working with white man's law. Basically, it's not Indigenous law. If there's challenges that you've come up against, like, you know, just personal kind of challenges where you've been, you know, asked to practice this certain law or uphold a certain law that's been written, you just go, you know what, that doesn't quite sit well with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as a lawyer, an Indigenous lawyer in particular, I think that you always do rub against those sorts of, you know, realities of the law being one way and your own sort of sense of who you are and where you would like to go in another way. And I don't think that in some ways that's unique necessarily
right.
to Indigenous peoples.
But or I think law in particular.
Or law in particular,
yeah.
indeed.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, I think it's something that, you know, by reading my stories and things like that, it's kind of like I'm standing up and saying, you know what, like, I want people to question the law. I want people to say, you know, it's not inviolable. It's not this, you know, great thing that we should put on a pedestal and treat as if it was, you know, some kind of writ from the Almighty, as much as it is something that I think as a society we still need to grapple with.
Right. Good. Juja, as a settler person, pardon me, and I had seen in the description of the play that this is on some level, and through the presentation, you were endeavoring to address the idea, the concepts, if not the actions of reconciliation. How do you see that this play does that?
Maybe like to step back a little bit is that when I was at the closing of the Truth and Reconciliation in Ottawa, I heard Justice Murray Sinclair say many great things, and some of the other people there as well. But the one that really stuck with me is, who am I, where do I come from, and why am I here? And I think these stories, and actually Goodnight's written a couple of other stories, which I hope she'll tell you about as well, which are all about the law and making the law accessible. And it's about, us as settlers, first of all, knowing who we are, where we come from, and why, you know, why we're here. And so these stories really help us to start that dialogue and to break that down, that like, what is reconciliation and how can I make that happen? It's like, I'm just me, you know? And so Goodnight and I do this as two people, just two citizens. You know, we don't have any financial backing because we really believe in making these both stories accessible, because they're funny and humorous ways of getting into these topics, which actually are really important to everybody. And when we get at them this way, when the discussions we have with these stories, people are dying to have the conversation.
And which people?
Well, we've met high school students, you know, who get the part about, like, it's not fair, it's unjust, you know, and they're trying to then apply these to the social, you know, issues of their day, you know, so being able to anchor them into real things. And then also it was interesting, you know, we did it in front of some judges a while ago, and they too were like, how can I, you know, I'm limited by what I'm doing. But within all of this, like, we learned within the box that they're working in how, and these people were trying really hard, you know, but they have limitations too. And so it was as soon as we walked into that room, we hadn't even presented anything, and one of the judges came up to Goodnight and said, I have this case, and how do I do this part, you know? And because he was looking for a solution that was a good, just solution. So people are trying to figure out what their role is to play in this.
Well, I hope you charged him a consultation fee, because that's important information.
We're working on it.
That I think a lot of people, you know, they're trying to enter, like you said, they're trying to enter into the conversation, and really, it's been this this word has got tossed out into the nation, and a lot of people are just sitting there going, "What do I do with this? What is this?" Yeah. And I think, you know, there's room to self-empower with that discussion in terms of, okay, what do I think reconciliation is, or what does it look like, smell like, taste like, feel like, kind of thing. Now, and then on a personal level, I have kind of come to a conclusion that I don't know that it's Indigenous responsibility to respond to and define and act upon what people think reconciliation is. Where are you at with that?
I think that's correct. I don't feel that, you know, I'm a messenger from the reconciliation gods
say,
you know, thou shalt do this or thou shalt do that. You know, and my stories are only one way in, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's sort of, you know, they address what I see as inconsistencies within what Canada portrays itself as and what its laws are saying.
Right.
And so for me, you know, reconciliation is also about that. It's like, okay, well, let's question that. Let's reconcile those two things, right? I mean, you know, the sort of in the law, reconciliation is really trying to make it so that the fact that Indigenous people were here before the European settlers right. came, and reconcile that with Crown sovereignty. So that's all, you know, for me, that's a huge part of these the message of these stories.
Right. Wow. It's going to take some radical work there, man. Like those words are coming up. Crown sovereignty. Talk about a huge pile of bird poo.
One of my stories, Noah. Well, it's called Dove, and it's based on Noah's Ark, and so he basically is trying to prove that his God-given right to fish supersedes the crown right to say there's a fishing ban on because of the collapse of the sockeye.
Those issues are so active right now. You know, the RCMP are taking, you know, and fishing Ministry of
Fisheries and Oceans.
Fisheries and Oceans are like always. They're like hawks over the Indigenous territories, like, don't take it one extra fish. Don't dig your clams. Don't be Indian, is basically what they're saying.
Yeah.
So where can people find you if they're interested to book you to read or consult for a fee?
Well, I like the fee part. I work at Devlin Galis Watson. And mm-hmm. so probably the best way to get hold of me is on through the website.
Okay. Which is what, please?
It's www.dgwlaw.ca.
Okay. Any last things you wanted to add before we head on into the weather?
Just that it's been a real pleasure, and you know, it's great, and congratulations on your 10-year anniversary.
Thank you very much. It's was a pleasure to hear the plays. Really well done, really well read, well written piece of theater.
Thank you.
Yes, enjoy.